are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything is well for you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you got it done. That's right. Because you always get it done. You are, there's no procrastination, no weakness. Get it done. I love that in you. Brothers and sisters, once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for the red, black, and green lion with African Imposed, and there you will find previously recorded programs that are dated and titled, and more to come on the website of Time for an Awakening, because we've been doing a number of shows that are not on there, or a number of programs that are not on there, so there will be soon. Other programming here on Time for Awakening Media, Monday, today is Monday, this evening, like I said, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but this Monday evening and all times are going to give are Eastern times, just accordingly. Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming right from Philadelphia. Right after Acres of Diamonds from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank will host Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, Revive from 8 to 10. On Thursday, Relationship Program, and that is at 7 p.m. 7 p.m. Eastern. I got to get the sister's name, the sister and the brother's name. It's a married couple. They do a relationship program on Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's right. It's not me. It is Sister POC, her program Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Time for an Awakening. Once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And a number to call for these programs if you want to give your perspective, if you have questions, comments, or concerns is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And if you are in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, and they sell the products that are produced by us. So check out WeBuyBlack.com. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahembe. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani
has been very instrumental in helping our people get to the motherland to visit, to maybe even talk about investment, or maybe even talk about repatriation. That's right, going back. So check Brother Bomani out at AfricaForTheAfricans.org. You can give the brother a call at 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of the previous tours and the latest tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. He has a couple of trips coming up in May, May 22nd to June 4th. He's going to Ghana, 14-day, for $3,700 on Delta Airlines. And he has two other tours this year. South Africa, November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And at the end of the year, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going to Ghana. So give Brother Bomani a call or go to the website and check out AfricaForTheAfricans.com. Books. We sell books. We need books. We need to read. That's right. We need information. And one of the best places to go here in the Atlanta area is in the West End, the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, they have furniture. They have clothing. They have artwork. They have this. They have that. They even have a Holocaust Museum, the African Holocaust Museum. That's right. The number to call at the Shrine, 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. They are closed Monday and Tuesday. They're open Wednesday through Saturday and Sunday. And they also have the red, black, and green shoes. That's right. The new Nat Turners and the UNI, the white with red UNIAs, all great shoes. Comfortable on my feet, that's for sure. They also have a history class every Saturday, 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. every Saturday, free and open to the public. The Know Thyself history class, and the instructor is Brother Olatunji. He does an outstanding job. But if you can't make that and you still like to get that information, they have a multimedia library. It is an extensive cultural library. They have over 15,000 video files, 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is, brothers and sisters, 4.5 terabytes of Africa or African enlightenment. So check that out at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Another bookstore is the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, which is very close to the kiosk of We Buy Black. So if you're around We Buy Black, then there's the bookstore right near there, the Medu Bookstore. And of course, Medu means writing in ancient Kemetic language. And usually there's a word that goes after Medu, and that is Netcher, which means gods. What the Greeks called hieroglyphs, they called Medu Netcher, and it meant the writing of the gods. It was power writing. So check out the Medu Bookstore. And if they don't have the book that you want, they'll get it for you. Believe me, they will. I've done it. Another bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother, Kahimde Ajamu. Brother Kahimde Ajamu's, you can give him a call at 404-519-8107 at the Black Dock Bookstore, 404-519-8107. He also sells apparel. He's got the red, black, and green shoes. He's got books. He's got other stuff. So check him out. Support our businesses. That's what's happening, huh? Support our businesses. I'm feeling a little stuffy here, man. I'm telling you. Something's trying to jump on me, but I ain't going to let it get me. No, sir. No, sirree. Ulu. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Us Lifting Us, and they're broadcast every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Every Thursday night. I'm Blog Talking. The number to dial is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development. It is a co-op. Pulling our monies together. It is for us the best solution. It is the best solution for us as a people in these ugly, trying times. Even here in the midst of an open, sworn enemy in North America, And these are united snakes. Us lifting us, brother. Pulling our resources together and doing for self. We've done that. And we created a cafe. Cafe Ulu. Located here in Atlanta. 2036 Sylvan Road. Open Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. They're closed on Mondays. Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we have coffee. We have African coffee. Central America, you name it. We get coffee from around the world. Our mainstays are Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia. We have other coffees. Loose teas and everything, brothers and sisters, that is sold at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. We have a vitality drink called Ambrosia. A delicious vitality drink that's made with alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, cane sugar, chlorophyll, hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. All good, delicious vitality drinks. The Ackerman Institute. Once again, I will continue to promote Brother Baba Mwalimu Baruti and what he's trying to do for our people in educating our children. The brother needs our support. You can write a check out to Ackerman Institute. Put it in the mail at P.O. Box. Address the letter Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30311. No, I apologize. Atlanta, Georgia 30310. That was my zip code. Okay. But you also can go to PayPal and Cash App. The information put in is $ Yah Baruti, Y-A-A Baruti. And also to paypal.me/Ackerman Village. So support the Ackerman House and the Ackerman Village. And yay, say some. We had the convention. I'm going to talk about that in a minute here in Atlanta of Us Lifting Us. Good brothers and sisters from around the country came through. Two sisters from Bermuda, Nana Peggy and Sister Deborah from Bermuda. And good brother and brother Madike. Madike, who is from Senegal, but he's doing work in Ireland. He's doing work in Ireland, and he told me he's eventually about to go back to Senegal. The Inye Sesim, a calendar of revolutionary daily thoughts, March 16th. I'm going to read the last 2 days and, of course, today's, which is the 18th, because I think they're very pointed, as always. I mean, every day, you know, there's a quote, a proverb or something by a brother or sister, an ancestor, a contemporary, and then, of course, Baba Rudy gives a narrative of it, and then there's an affirmation. And some of them are just wake us up, putting something on our minds. March 16th. A weak person goes where he is smiled at. Hirito Proverb. The process of creative, cultural, and social engineering that began molding our traditions began when Africans began. It began with us, and we began with it. And because we share life and truth with it, it is still there, waiting on our return. The logic behind African traditions has not changed with passage of time because it still makes sense for us. And that will not change because we will always be African. Our collective personality, customs, designs these traditions to fit us, and they, in turn, reinforce us. In the process, the cultural foundation came into life of its own, a continuous life that has lasted throughout all our generations. It lives as an internal entity expressing itself through us. It is constant and with us until we are no more. The values and beliefs it prescribes for adherence determines the form of our traditions. Take whatever environment and state we find ourselves in. Whatever environment or state we find ourselves in, brothers and sisters, we are still African. Because I'm sorry about it, a little stuffy. And we should note that the values and beliefs that come out of this cultural foundation do not change either. If anything changes, it is the people who are the cultural heirs. And when the people change, what they believe to be and honor has their traditions change accordingly. But it is not really the traditions that change. People in doubt and fear or in love with others' validation lose sight of their ancestors, what they have given them. It is they who substitute others' traditions for their own in defiance acts of self-hatred. It is only then that the enemy smiles so easily and disarms us. Affirm, un-African smiles do not disarm me. Affirm, un-African smiles do not disarm me. March 17th. I would now remind my beloved black sisters that a positive, optimistic, loving woman strengthens and gives life to a man. But an antagonistic, negative, or pessimistic one can destroy him. Ishaka Musa Bereshango. A woman warrior looks for a man's potential. Her questions are of his strength, power, persistence, and resilience. His ability to interpretively confront challenges, his clarity of vision. The answer for her lies in what he has done and is doing now relative to what he says he intends to do. That's right, actions speak louder than words. I have long reflected on the accuracy of an elder sister's observation that a man chases a woman until she catches him. I repeat, a man chases a woman until she catches him. Affirm, I am secure in my compliment. Affirm, I am secure in my compliment. March 18th. Solitude, the long moments of meditative contemplation have given me the key to my freedom. Ilhaj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, the Honorable Malcolm X. It is well known fact that many of our warriors raised from behind prison walls. And suddenly for many of them, prison was the first time that they had the opportunity to seriously contemplate their power and the state of African people. It is there where they find their African selves. Not being able to access our most important front lines from where they are makes them no less warriors than those who are on the outside. Warriors are warriors wherever they may be. In fact, someone on the outside are more spiritually and mentally imprisoned than those physically held captive in the deepest bowels of this beast. A conscious mentality is never the sole domain of free Africans. If anything, direct oppression hones stronger, more determined soldier. In spirits doggedly unbroken, hell breeds fearlessness. So many of these unnamed African daily work against odds most of us could never imagine. It is beyond most of us to envision the work that they put into strengthening themselves in the revolutionary spirit of the likes of George Jackson, Mumia Abdul-Jamal, Mutulu Tsakur, Santi Ali Kole. And these are the political prisoners that are still in. I believe George Jackson has passed, I believe. I'm not sure. But I know Mumia hanging on in there, Mutulu Tsakur, and Santi Ali Kole are all political prisoners. Location has never been as important as mentality. This is a pan-African nation-building effort. And in the eyes of those of us who understand this, prison is simply another major African European-dominated country. Unfortunately, we often dismiss these acknowledgeable, dedicated warriors to our enemy's benefit. Affirm, I prize the awareness gained in precious moments of solitude. Affirm, I prize the awareness gained in precious moments of solitude. The Enye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought for our brothers and sisters, the Enye Sesem. You can pick that book up if you're in Atlanta area from Baba Baruti and the work that he has done. And we appreciate Baba Baruti and his lovely wife, Yah Baruti. I think it was the sixth or seventh annual ULU convention, Us Lifting Us, and the brothers and sisters from around the country. And like I said, we had Brother Madike, who is in from Senegal, but he's living in Ireland. The two sisters, Sister Nana Peggy and Sister Deborah from Bermuda. And, man, I looked to try to say, I thought Bermuda was more in the Caribbean, man. Bermuda, like, is in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, it is a good ways from, it's on the same parallel with, I'd say, Savannah in South Carolina, in that area. You go straight east and you'll catch up with Bermuda. But we had a good 3 days. Well, Friday we had a meet and greet at the cafe. And then Saturday and yesterday we took care of business. And I am firmly in the belief that Us Lifting Us is the answer, or one of the answers, in conjunction with other things that we could do to help liberate ourselves, liberate our hearts and minds, pull our resources, create things for ourselves and do for ourselves. That's what we must do. That is our quest. There's no doubt about it. So I really appreciate the brothers and sisters and the work that they have done with ULU. And we had some new board members. Three sisters, three intelligent, lovely, beautiful, strong sisters stepped up, and these are the new board members. They have now four sisters on the board, and I expect them to do great things. In fact, one of the sisters couldn't make it because she was in Denver, and if you know what happened with the storm, she couldn't get out of Denver. And so she used the one of those boards that they have in schools now, where it's on the internet, and so we could do FaceTime with her, and that was great. We could see her, she could see us, and we communicated back and forth, and it worked well, because actually she was going to be the convener, but Sister Shea stepped in. That's brother, and you know, I had Brother Akima on the program this past Friday, pumping up the convention. And that is Brother Akima's daughter, Sister Shay. She did an outstanding job of keeping everything on task and making sure everything was flowing. Got a lot of business done. You know, talked a lot about how to help strengthen ULU, developing things. And so, once again, I'll be talking more about that as time goes, and because I want us to, I mean, really. As I said to the brothers and sisters yesterday, we are the pioneers in this movement. We are the ones that are making the sacrifice monetarily and time-wise. Because given the reality of the situation and what we're trying to do, is it an investment? Yes, it is. Could it be a return? It could be. But we also know that we're investing in the future of African people and our ability to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. Just like Baba Kambizi, who did an outstanding presentation yesterday morning, me and Baba Kambizi, we went to the Pan-African conference in D.C., getting ready for the Pan-African conference next year in Ghana. And in fact, they're going to have a Pan-African conference in Atlanta, I believe in the spring, because I know the bigger conference in Ghana is next year in the fall, I believe. And he said, because when we went to that conference, with all the things that we're doing in terms of developing this Pan-African ideology, one of the things we need to do to make sure that we do, and that is to have an economic answer to our situation, and a collective economic answer is the true only answer. A form, I don't care what you call it, but a form where people are pulling together, because capitalism is an evil system. As you see on the continent, when you see individuals on the continent of Africa, which is a rich continent in mineral wealth and rich in human potential. But you see the same thing that happens here in the West. An individual who amassed tremendous amounts of wealth. There's other than the top 10 ministers in Christianity. Two or three. I know two for sure. Are Nigerian, are African. And I'm talking about when they're making millions. They are making millions. And what is ironic about Christianity, where it flourishes in terms of the church and its administration, be it a pastor or a reverend or father or whatever, the people don't. The people don't. Now, we have a bunch of mega churches here and a bunch of mega preachers, and I'm not sure about the Caucasian ones, but I'll just talk about the T.D. Jakes and the Creflo Dollars, and of course Eddie Long is deceased. He's an ancestor, but his church is, and a few others, but they ain't making what Joel Osteen and some of those other Duplessis, with the one who was talking about, I need another jet, just like Creflo did, and he was, of course, blasted. But I believe he got the jet. Because one thing is clear to me within Christianity: they want your mind. They want you to believe that there's nothing outside of Christianity, and your belief that Jesus is God and he died for your sins, and because of that you must believe in Jesus for you to go into eternal heaven. And of course that prevents us from thinking clearly. It prevents us from thinking culturally. It prevents us from thinking historically in terms of who we are, and understanding that this religion, see, we talked about that a lot this past weekend, the difference between religion and spirituality. We've always been a spiritual people. But the religions that have been imposed upon us, Islam and Christianity and probably anything else, have not been a true benefit for us as a people. I'm not going to say, and it would be ludicrous for me to say that an individual who within the church, who through the teachings of Christianity decided to strongly believe so that he or she achieved some things, and of course attributed that to their belief and their association with that religion. It could be Hinduism. It could be the Hare Krishnas. It could be Seventh Day Adventists. I mean, I met a sister who is a holistic healer. She's Seventh Day Adventist. And she believes through that religion that God shows her, teaches her, inspires her to create what she has through plants as a holistic healer. And the people that go to her, just like Dr. Sabi, may God be pleased with him and the work that he has done for our people. They killed Dr. Sabi. And they're going to kill other holistic healers, because why? They don't want you to develop a system that is outside of the medical system in this country. The big pharmaceutical and the amounts of money they make, the hospitals, the amounts of money they make. This is, as one Caucasian said, this system that America has is the best healthcare system money can buy. It's not the best healthcare system. Of course it's not. It is riddled with inequality. In fact, when Barack Obama, excuse me, y'all, when Barack Obama ran for president, he was talking about universal health care, which is health care for everyone. Well, of course, you know, he had to tone that down because they don't want no socialism programs. It's about money. And so the health care system became this. The affordable health care system was affordable insurance. It wasn't health care. It was insurance. And because the insurance companies wanted to make sure they maintained their share, but to make the Affordable Health Care Act, you know, excuse me, I apologize. I think I said I'm a little stuffy. But what made the Affordable Health Care Act go awry was the young people who were supposed to buy into the program, because all the young people would buy into the program. Then people like myself and older, or people who have preconditions, will get health care at a reasonable amount. But because they decided not to, and they started leaving in droves, then people's premiums started going up and up. I had one guy who was paying $1,500 a month for health care. $1,500. His wife, I believe she had some ailments. He had an ailment, you know. And so that's what happened to the program. They don't want. They could. Other Western countries have it. All the countries pretty much in Europe, Japan, have a health care program for all its people. But because of capitalism, entrenched capitalism here, everything is about, at every level, about somebody going to get some money. So us lifting us, like I said, I love it. I love the people. I love the people involved. Baba Akima, who along with some others got together many years ago, had the vision, had the understanding, put it out there. I was told about it by Baba Tony Courtney in Milwaukee, and looked at it right away, became a member right away. We have over 500 members worldwide. All it takes to be a member is $50 a year. But I'm promoting and pushing the fact that we need to give to ULU monthly, if possible, if you could, $10, $15, $25, $50. Because ULU really becomes stronger when we buy units. We call them units. Some say shares, but they're units. Whatever you call it, it's an investment. I know that this investment is not going to see the dividends right away. And it may not happen for me, because I don't see it happening in the next 5 years or whatever, or even long. But it all depends. Who knows? A lot of us could wake up and say, you know what? That's what we should have been, damn it, doing all along. Putting our monies together, trusting one another, believing in one another, respecting one another, loving one another to make it happen. It could, if we have that shared vision. Unfortunately, I know a lot of us don't have that vision, you know. But hopefully we'll develop that vision, because we're going to continue to push and promote ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, the fourth principle of Kwanzaa, cooperative economics. Not somebody who gets rich off of everybody, who pays workers minimum amounts of money, they can barely do anything. Not somebody who inflates prices for goods and services, that makes others say, this is way too high. I could go to the Caucasian, I could go to the Arab store or whatever. It was good to see in a piece, I don't know if you saw it, Facebook or whatever, email about the beauty supply store that opened up in Nashville, American African Beauty Supply Store. And many people, they were lined up waiting for it to open, and they did very well. And I'm hoping they'll continue to do so. Hopefully they'll build another one. Because the arrogance of the Koreans, they said, we're going to come to America, and we're going to do your nails, your feet, and we're going to do your head. We're going to sew up the beauty supply. In Milwaukee, we one sister, many years ago, she was mistreated at a beauty supply store. And the community rallied, and we marched. Well, many times the brothers and sisters were waiting for us to leave. And then they would go in there so they could save a dollar on some weave, you know. So I tell you. But a resolution happened. I mean, they apologized, and I think they gave her some kind of settlement. But she was a pregnant sister. You know, but what we found out, we really weren't hurting them because they were part of a consortium, part of a network of Korean beauty supply stores. In fact, that was a hub. Because that's a pretty big building. The store area was small, but that was a pretty big building because they supplied the many other beauty supply stores. That's what I'm saying. That should be us in our community. We should develop the attitude that Dr. John Henry Clark, and you know how I love Dr. John Henry Clark, said, I will never buy something that my people don't make. Shoes, clothes, socks, drawers, bras, whatever. Everything that we buy, we don't produce. Everything. And that must change. See, the theory behind ULU, us lifting us, is by pulling these resources together, finding the individuals who have the ideas, may not have the capital. We're not going to front nobody. The businesses that we create will be owned by us. You got an idea, but it's so strong, and you ain't tripping that it's my idea, so I want it for myself, but you have the mindset that it's my idea, but I want to share it because I think it's going to be a great benefit to our people. And I want to be a part of ULU. I want to be a part of it. I'll run the business. I'll get a decent wage or compensation for my expertise and knowledge. I'll hire people and train them to make sure they give a level of service for our product that is respectful. It's all there. It's all possible. But if we don't want to run the economy of our community, we'll be always at the mercy of those who do. We'll be at the mercy of Arabs, Koreans, Chinese, Caucasians, whatever. While we continue to beg instead of doing for ourselves. We have everything we need. Now, I did a piece on reparations, and I hope to have Brother Conrad on, Brother Dr. Conrad World on this Friday to talk about that. Hope to deal with that. Because, see, really, we have everything we need right now. The only thing we don't have, our right mind. That's the only thing we don't have. Our right mind. We have everything we need. And if we're in our right mind, it would change that dynamic. And then not only that, when we go for reparations, we're going as a group. We're going as a people. We're going as a nation. We're going as a... We're not... See, the ADOS thing, American descendants of... is divisive. It's divisive. They're saying, no, only people who can get reparations are the American descendants of. So if you came here after 1890 or whatever, 1865, whatever, I don't know. No, then you can't get it. If your folks came here as immigrants or refugees from Nigeria or other African countries or the Caribbean, you know, no, you ain't getting it. That's for us. America. And we want money. Individually, we want money. I don't remember this past weekend us talking about reparations. I mean, I know members in ULU understand and support the repair for us. But what ULU is part of the internal reparations. That's what we need first. My good brother and good friend, Ken Bridges, the Mautai Network, we were working on the Millions for Reparations. He said, this is what we must do for ourselves. And if we do this, then yes, reparations will come to us. Because why? We are together and we are strong. That's what we need to do, brothers and sisters. And the vehicle to do it is us lifting us. ULU. I'm going to take a call. We got a caller. Good morning, 404. Good morning. 404.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Hey, good morning, dear brother. How are you?
Hey, I'm still learning, man. Hey, that call you had, that show you had Friday, you was right on the money, man. I was going to ask you about that Mautai thing back in the day with Ken Bridges.
Yes. Yeah, good brother, man. Yeah. And the Mautai products that, I mean, good products, man, too. You know?
Yes, sir.
Some good products. And, you know, and that's more on the line, Brother West, of a network marketing piece. But, you know, but the thing is that that's what we must do. We must develop things that we have some control over. We must develop some things that we can share with one another. We can support one another in. Man, imagine if we decide this, hey, I don't give a damn who's in these neighborhoods. We ain't buying from you.
That's right.
Because we don't have a damn store in any of their communities.
I agree, man. On the best thing we can use now is non-participation and use our money as the tool, man, that it is. And we can shut these folks down. Just imagine yesterday how many of these stupid, low-vibrating Negroes were celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's the doggone. They celebrating the way they genocide on the Twat people.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, you got an email address? Because I'd like to send you stuff, man.
Sure. My email address is O-S-H-I.
O-S-H-I.
427.
427.
No. 427. O-S-H-I. O-S-H-I. 427. A is in apple. D is in dog. E is in Edward. O-S-H-I. 427. A-D-E. At gmail.com.
What email?
Gmail. At gmail.com.
Okay. All right.
I look forward to it, Wes.
All right. Yeah, man, because I get all kind of offers. I got one now where the people in South Africa voting, and they're giving the white folks a date to get the hell out of South Africa, man, because they want our land. They want our land back. Okay, I'm reading an article right now where the people in South Africa say these folks on the clock, they're giving them a date to get the hell out of there and give our land back to our people.
I say.
Yes, sir.
I agree. I say. But you got to understand, in South Africa, you know, the Caucasians are still running stuff. In Namibia, the Germans are still running stuff. The Chinese are in Africa big. They're in Africa with such arrogance. I saw a picture, a piece where this Chinese man was just dogging his sister out and had her looking all naked. And, oh, man, it's just crazy. There's no way that we could do anything in these other countries that are in Africa that these people are doing. Because we lack strong leadership and cohesion and togetherness and unity, these things will continue to happen because we are fragmented. Damn it, I don't give a damn what language you speak. I don't give a damn what country you come from. We are one African. We're one people. And that's how we need to operate from this moment going forward.
I agree, man. That's what the enemy love to separate us with all these doggone artificial compartments. Talking about millennials and baby boomers and all this old separation stuff, man.
Yeah. I hear you.
And once we realize that we, hey, like my man Neely Fuller say, oh, these white folks consider us a one block rule. From one block away, they can tell if you black, it don't matter what your so-called circumstance, you're
right.
Still a ninja.
That's right.
So once we at war, man, we at war.
That's right.
Mother Ocean.
That's right. We're at war. We have been warred upon.
That damn thing about St. Patrick's Day, man, that pissed me off, man. I try to tell all my people, that's the day that they killed all the twa people. Call them leprechauns, man. And well, my people still celebrating the holy day. Everything's taken, man. Why the hell are black people so stupid to celebrate our own genocide, man? Yeah.
Well, that happened before St. Patrick, who was the one that they celebrate because he's supposed to have driven the snakes out. Not literal, metaphorically,
right.
But it was the Druids that they drove out.
Yes, sir.
See? And then they started celebrating that. It's the Druids. But yeah.
Yeah, but the Druids was us that we had them dreadlocks, man. I call them locks. Ain't
right,
dreads,
exactly.
No,
not dread. The European, right. The European, when they saw how we were locking our hair, scared the hell out of them. So it was dread. It was a dread to them.
The dread, that's right. You know it, man.
They dreaded the fact that we had done this. See?
Yeah.
So that's why, when you're right, they're just locks. They're not dreadlocks, they're locks. We locked our hair. It was a dread to the Europeans. So,
Same thing with Medusa.
Yeah.
She was a bad sister.
Right.
She looked at them and turned their ass to stone.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the metaphors. All right, Wes, keep on listening, brother. Let me get this other call.
I'll send you some information, man. I'm
okay.
Gonna send it to you.
I look forward to it, brother. Peace to you.
All right.
646, good morning.
Yeah, what's happening, Brother Ochi? It looks like Research West is gonna send you
some
of his prime research information.
That's right, brother, and I'll be so informed. And I'll inform the listening audience of the research that Brother Wes has done on issues pertaining to our people.
Yes, I hear you. Hey, listen, OC, you know, we got to really stop playing games with this reparations thing, man. Because the way that this thing is going, if we don't get our act together and come together, we not going to get no reparations. These white folks are just going to use it to keep black folks divided here and abroad and basically pit one against the other and just play games with them.
Right.
For their benefits to do whatever they wish to do.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Well, see, you know, I think the for Caucasians, they're adamant against us receiving repair for the damage they've done to us. They're adamant about it. No, you don't get no reparations.
I'm
saying what, Jay?
I would be too if I was white.
Oh, okay.
Why would I want to give a Negro something any damn way?
Yeah.
I basically got a more remote control.
Right.
I basically control him.
Right.
I basically got him to the point to where he can't see the forest from the trees.
Right.
If I tell the Negro to go one way, he'll go that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The sad thing is, if you don't want sovereignty and you don't want to reclaim your Africanness, you're just a Negro on remote control, bro.
Yeah.
Like I said, and I will always say, white folks peg you from when you are a child and when you first come into their midst. And when do you first come into their midst? When you born and when you start going to school. Now, if you go to school and they see that you have the ability to learn and you are a good Negro and your parents are decent Negroes, or if they just want to use you for a test case, charity case, today you got.
Hello? Jay, you there? Hello? Oh, you must have had a call. I'm going to take a break. It is that time. Going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the NCAA, my annual. I can't stand the NCAA. So we're going to be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
And don't let nobody stop.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, right after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Blacks 365. Tomorrow, Tuesday night, from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Wednesday, from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. And then on Thursday, the relationship program, I got to get the sister and brother's name, at 7 p.m. on Thursday. Friday, if it's Friday, it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1, Revive, once again, with POC, Proof of Consciousness. And then Sunday night, from 7 p.m. until it's time for an awakening once again. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, it's my annual I Can't Stand the National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NC2A. I hate them with a damn passion. And the current director of the NC2A, Mark Emmerich, every time I see that crack, I want to bust him in his face. I mean it. Miles Brand wasn't, he was, and the other cat before him, man. But this dude, you know, I don't want to play this, but I'm going to play it. And I got some other information I got from the USA Today from last week. And they have the amount of money that the coaches in college basketball are making. Now, understand, the numbers that they got here are only numbers for public universities. The private universities, those numbers are not there because they're private. Marquette, St. John's, other private institutions. But the public institutions, the big five conferences, you know, the ACC, the Southeast Conference, Big 12, Big 10, Pac-12, these cats are making millions. But there was a program last week tonight, and when I saw the program a couple years ago, I didn't play it last year, and only because I hate the fact that contained in the program, they make a mockery of Swahili, of learning Swahili and African history, which is bull. To me, American African people need to learn our history. Now, granted, I don't believe that it could be properly taught, and it could, in a Caucasian university setting. It could. You know, and Swahili, making fun of learning Swahili. Because I think we ought to learn a language that is ours, that we can speak to one another that is ours. So from that perspective, I can't stand it. But to me, it's a good piece. And so we're going to play it. And so it's about a 20-minute piece. So be patient. This is last week tonight. And this was broadcast back in 2015. Or it might have been 2016, but some of the stuff they used was from 2015. You know, I think it was 2016. And this is on the NC2A.
Our main story tonight concerns the fact that one of America's most sacred annual traditions is upon us.
Everything comes down to this.
Oh, my goodness!
Can I get the wheels in motion?
Oh, yeah!
Bring the noise.
It goes! Yes!
As good as it gets.
March is on.
Wow! Holy shit! Yes, March is on. Fuck you, February. And April, I'll see you in hell. It's March o'clock, assholes. The first round of March Madness, the year's biggest college tournament,
starts on Tuesday, and the entire nation will be watching, which means big, big money.
March Madness now brings in over $1 billion in TV ad revenue.
$1 billion. That's more than the Super Bowl. It's almost more than the entire NFL postseason combined. And that might seem like a lot until you consider the number of ads they managed to pack in.
Sponsored by Lexus.
AT&T at the Half is presented by AT&T.
Our game is brought to you in HDTV by HP.
Coke Zero presents real fans of NCAA March Madness.
Pretty soon, the only thing left to sponsor will be the sponsorships themselves. And now Pepsi presents a Geico look at Nabisco's Toyota Moment of the Game, brought to you by Taco Bell. Because you should know, everything about this tournament is branded. Even the famous moment where players cut down the net.
Warner Ladder proud to donate to the general scholarship fund of every school in this year's Final Four. Warner, the official ladder of the NCAA basketball championships.
Are you kidding me? A Warner ladder? Look, as a ladder enthusiast, I can tell you right now, Warner's a pure shit. Unless you want a broken back, in which case, by all means, go with Warner. But you'd be better off slapping on a pair of stilts and trying to balance on a yoga ball. I'm a DeWalt man, of course. I'm not a ladder idiot. Seriously, there is nothing inherently wrong with a sporting tournament making huge amounts of money. But there is something slightly troubling about a $1 billion sports enterprise where the athletes are not paid a penny. Because they aren't. And as the head of the NCAA, Mark Emmett, will tell you, they don't want that to change.
There's not even a salary to debate. They're not employees. They're students.
The fact is they're not employees. They're student athletes. I can't say often enough, obviously, that student athletes are students. They are not employees.
The only other people who say they're not employees that much are people who run illegal sweatshops out of their basements. Oh, they're not employees. It's a summer camp where they make the same T-shirt over and over again thousands of times. It's summer fun year-round. And the problem is, when you don't pay people, there are consequences. One of the players who climbed the sponsored ladder last year was Shabazz Napier, who happened to let slip a startling fact after one of the games.
You know, sometimes, like I said, there's hungry nights when I'm not able to eat, but I still got to play up to my, you know, capabilities. There are hungry nights that I go to bed and I'm starving.
That's insane. Hunger Games should take place annually in a dystopian future, not every March sponsored by Coca-Cola on CBS. The NCAA insists that student athletes cannot be paid because they're amateurs. And though they've slightly softened their rules on food, among other things, in the last year, they still exercise a ridiculous amount of control over players.
Before they're allowed to compete, athletes have to sign this form saying that they are amateurs. They give up any compensation for playing and promise to abide by all the rules in this 440-page manual.
A 400-odd page manual of rules. The only other thing that has that many finicky little rules would be a sex party at Wes Anderson's house. Guests are required to wear lingerie of only a pre-war Andalusian vintage. Fellatio may only be accompanied by music from the Kinks and early Cat Stevens. And condoms shall be found nestled inside a small diorama of the sinking of the Lusitania. Now everybody f***. And look, the NCAA rulebook is not just for show, as a New Mexico player discovered a few years back.
A discount on a hotel ballroom is the impermissible benefit and NCAA minor violation that caused Jamal Fenn to be suspended.
Yes, that's right. He was suspended for unwittingly receiving a $250 discount on a ballroom for his 21st birthday party. And by the way, a discounted ballroom. Are we absolutely sure he was turning 21 and not celebrating his 40th wedding anniversary with his lovely wife, Marion? Because that would make more sense. But the point is, some rule enforcements go from the petty to the downright heartless.
The late Rick Majerus, when he was at Utah, had one of his players who lost one of his parents. And he took him to lunch before putting him on a plane to send him home. And the NCAA said that was a violation because you can't give an athlete something you don't give another student.
Oh, sure, I get that. If you show one player basic human decency, you have to show everyone basic human decency. Nobody wants that. And to be fair here, The NCAA claim that while student athletes are not being paid, they are being compensated with something incredibly valuable.
We provide them with remarkable opportunities to get an education at the finest universities on earth. That's American universities and colleges.
Yes, athletes are paid in an education, the only currency more difficult to spend than Bitcoin. And look, a four-year education is undeniably valuable, assuming that, one, you don't get hurt and lose your scholarship, which can happen, and two, that you have time to study. Because if you're a student athlete playing top-level basketball or football, that can be difficult. Listen to current NFL player Richard Sherman reminisce about his college days.
You wake up in the morning, you have weights at this time. Then after weights, you go to class. And after class, you go maybe try to grab you a quick bite to eat. Then after you get your quick bite to eat, you go straight to meetings. And after meetings, you got practice. And after practice, you got to try to get all the work done you had throughout the day. I would love for a regular student to have a student athlete schedule during the season for just one quarter or one semester and show me how you balance that.
He's right. Paying top college athletes with an education is sort of like telling a full-time nurse, there's no salary for this job, we're just going to be giving you free trumpet lessons, which you'll be too busy to do, but if you don't learn to play the trumpet, you're fired. Does that sound fair? I think that sounds fair. And the education athletes do get is sometimes insultingly watered down. Last year, an investigation revealed that the University of North Carolina had, for years, held fraudulent so-called paper classes that boosted athletes' grades.
Football and basketball players, they would be enrolled, steered to and enrolled in a paper class in African American studies. So we could have a football player who in the spring might have a GPA of 1.4, but in the summertime we put them in three paper classes and we get A minus, and lo and behold, he's academically eligible to play football in the fall. And that's how the system worked.
Okay, let's not pretend there isn't something offensive about an African-American studies course being an easy major at that school. Here, just take this class investigating the social, political and cultural complexities inherent to the black American experience. It'll be a f***ing breeze. Phone it in. Phone the thing in. And it gets worse. It gets worse because many student athletes at UNC also left with an unusual language credit.
What language did you study?
Swahili.
Swahili.
Yes.
Does that come in handy since you graduated?
No, not at all.
What language did you take?
I took Swahili.
Swahili.
Yes.
Do you speak Swahili a little bit?
As of right now, no.
Encouraging black student athletes to take bullshit Swahili courses is the kind of institutional prejudice which might well turn up in one of their African-American studies courses. So, let's recap. Student athletes don't get paid and sometimes don't even get educated, but what they do get is the chance to learn from coaches who will take them under their wing and provide them with life lessons and valuable guidance.
Kill you!
Fuck you. And fuck me. And fuck everybody. That is fucking bullshit.
Now that is inspirational. Someone should really put that on a cat poster. And while this mistreatment is happening, it's a good poster. Whilst this lifts your spirits, whilst this mistreatment is happening, huge money is being made. And not just while they're students, because sometimes the NCAA makes money off players years afterwards. Case in point, a few years ago, the NCAA proudly licensed this video game, a game whose selling point was authenticity.
Crowd, the noise, the cheerleaders.
The intensity of the game, the passion of the game.
It's all about authenticity.
The level of authenticity that we go to is extremely deep.
To be honest, I thought the only people that obsessed with how authentic something was like that were people from San Diego talking about Mexican food. I get it, Kendall, but there are avocados everywhere now, okay? We've all got them now. In fact, that game was so authentic, it created a bit of an awkward moment for Ed O'Bannon, a former UCLA star player who currently works at a car dealership in Las Vegas.
I was with a friend, and he said that his son had a video game with me in it. Hey, you want to go and check it out? You know, so yeah, of course. Left-handed, height, weight, skin color, everything. Ball-headed. It was me for sure.
I'm thinking to myself, wow, they got me on the video game. And while this kid was playing, he almost whispers it in my ear. He's like, You know, the crazy thing about this is that you didn't get paid.
Okay. First of all, I don't know who that kid was, but that's a dick move. Hey, Ed. Ed, pretty crazy how you got nothing for this, right, Ed? Must be pretty humiliating, right, Ed? About you not getting any money for this, Ed? Ed, pretty annoying, right, Ed? Are you annoyed, Ed? Are you annoyed right now, Ed? Is it annoying to you, Ed? They actually don't make that game anymore, in part because Ed O'Bannon sued the NCAA over their rules on compensating athletes and won. The NCAA is currently appealing that decision, which would allow players to be paid, partly because, as they often claim, schools could barely afford it.
14 schools out of the 1,100 last year actually had positive cash flow out of intercollegiate athletics. It's anything but a money-making proposition for universities and colleges.
Exactly. We have sports for the same reason Mariah Carey has an acting career. God knows it's not to make a profit. It's for the love of the game. Okay? That's the principle. Now, he's not wrong that many departments barely break even, although that's a little misleading, because for the schools that generate most of the money, those losses are sometimes by design.
Profits are what's left when you account for expenses. They can come up with an awful lot of expenses, an awful lot of salaries. They find a ton of ways to spend a ton of money.
That's true. In keeping with their non-profit status, some schools spend money to make it look like they're not making too much money. It's like when your rich friend buys diesel jeans that already have holes in them. Come on, Braden. We all know that you can afford to have warm knees. You're not fooling anyone, B. And when rich schools do this to move money around, not so rich schools end up getting into an arms race to compete. It's one of the reasons why the 10 largest football stadiums in the country belong to colleges. In fact, the University of Michigan has claimed that on game days, their stadium is the fourth largest city in the state of Michigan. And incidentally, also the one with the fewest rusted out auto plants now run by raccoons. So, you know, they're doing their best. But stadiums are just the beginning. Alabama made an MTV Crib-style video showing off their ludicrously opulent football facilities.
One of the really the best features, I think, of the locker room is the hydrotherapy area. We have in there a hot tub and a cold tub. And I really use the term tub, but really they're pools.
Okay, I never thought I'd say this, but Alabama, stop showing off your ostentatious wealth, okay? And the crazy thing is, it is not just buildings that schools spend money on.
Mississippi State coach Dan Mullen was just given a raise, pushing his salary to $4 million a year.
$7 million a year for the next 8 years. That's Alabama coach Nick Saban's new deal.
University of Kentucky announced a $52 million seven-year contract extension with head basketball coach John Calipari.
Now, before you get too shocked, remember, America has a long, proud history of paying aging white men unconscionable amounts of money for screaming at people. So there's precedence. That's what I'm saying, there's precedent there. But all this makes it even harder to swallow when some coaches, like Clemson's Dabo Swinney, a man who makes over $3 million a year, insists that his players not get paid.
As far as paying players, professionalizing college athletics, that's where you lose me. I'll go do something else because, you know, there's enough entitlement in this world as it is.
Now, wait. If you find that infuriating, you might like to know that Dabo Swinney is an anagram for soybean wind, which I think is fitting because he seems as pleasant as an edamame fart. And the fact... And it's a fact that his name is an anagram for soybean wind. It's not relevant to this discussion, but I thought it was worth mentioning because it feels like something he'd be annoyed by and would not want people to know on a wide basis. Hashtag soybean wind. And, by the way, the larger point is, Swinney has trademarked his name for use on shirts because he's allowed to do that. The NCAA manual explicitly states coaches are free to pursue endorsement or consultation contracts. And players are acutely aware of this discrepancy. Here's former University of Michigan basketball star Jalen Rose.
The revenue stream for coaches people underestimate. You get paid from the school, you get paid from camps, you get paid from apparel company, have a TV deal, you have your radio show. That's five revenue streams for the coach. So when I come into practice and I miss a couple of shots and I dribble it off my foot, And coach said, Jalen, what's going on with you? What's going on with me? My mother light's about to get cut off. That's my problem.
That makes sense. Sometimes it must be tough to focus on your lights out shooting when your mother's lights are literally going out. And if you're thinking, well, they'll all get rich when they become professional athletes, that's true in a fractional number of cases, because less than 2% of college basketball and football players go pro. So if you're an athlete who dreams of being a Viking or a wizard, you probably have about the same chance of becoming an actual Viking or an actual wizard. And all of this assumes that they manage to stay healthy, because if they get injured, a whole host of other problems can emerge. Fun fact, the very first executive director of the NCAA stated that he crafted the term student-athlete in the 1950s explicitly to avoid workers' comp for injured athletes. And 60 years later, that term is still working.
Kyle Hardrick was so good that Oklahoma offered him a basketball scholarship in ninth grade. But after a knee injury during practice his freshman year, he lost his scholarship. And with medical bills piling up, he couldn't afford to stay in school.
If it was workman's comp, my son would have been taken care of for the rest of his life. He would have been able to finish his college.
To be fair, he was promised an education, and he got one. A first-class education in how little schools sometimes give a shit about their student-athletes. This whole system seems fundamentally flawed. And yet the NCAA constantly insists there is no way athletes can be paid even a nominal amount because...
The notion of converting a student to a paid employee is something that is utterly antithetical to the whole principle of intercollegiate athletics. It completely changes the entire notion of what college sports is all about.
You know what? I think you might be right. If college sports is all about exploiting people, then yes, paying athletes would absolutely change the entire notion of what college sports are all about. And look, no one is saying that they need to be paid millions or hundreds of thousands or the same amount or even that every school needs to pay every athlete. But to pay everyone zero when the kid selling their jersey at the campus bookstore gets $10 an hour seems a little bit strange. And if it truly is all about the romance of amateurism, that's fine. Give up the sponsorships and the TV deals, stop paying the coaches, and have teams run by an asthmatic anthropology professor with a whistle. But if you're going to change nothing, at least be honest about the business you're engaged in. Feel free to bring back your video games, but in the spirit of authenticity that seems to matter so much to you, make them a little more accurate.
Rated E for exploitative.
New from LWT Sports, March Sadness 2015, the most authentic college basketball game of all time. Because any game can give you the excitement of college athletics, but that's only about 2% of your week. For the first time, you'll get to experience the other 98%.
What are you, a fucking idiot? I'm gonna fucking kill you! You pass like a fucking pussy!
You'll get to enjoy all the fun of being screamed at by a middle-aged millionaire while living in constant fear of losing your scholarship, be it from a career-ending injury, accidentally accepting a free lunch when you're hungry, or directly profiting in any way from the value of your work. Because making money's utterly antithetical to the whole principle of collegiate athletics. But don't take it from us. Take it from the unwilling star of EA's NCAA Basketball 09, Ed O'Bannon.
This game is every bit as fucked up as a real thing.
You get to create your own player and enjoy an authentic student-athlete experience. Because our game puts just as much emphasis on an education as a real NCAA Division I school does. Are you ready for your Swahili exam? Congratulations, student. You speak Swahili. Now, back to the gym. It's the most authentic college game of all time. As another unpaid star of NCAA Basketball 09, Jalen Rose will attest.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's like.
And this year, if you play LWT's NCAA March Sadness, you can play in two new modes. Coach Mode, which consists mostly of screaming at 18-year-olds.
Assholes! Assholes! I'm gonna kill all of you entitled assholes!
Or you can choose School Administrator Mode, where your only job is figuring out how to somehow remain a non-profit. You want a stadium across from your stadium? How about a rocket ship? But be careful, because if you use a penny of that money to pay your players, game over. The point is, no matter which mode you choose, you're guaranteed all the joy of top-level college athletics.
March Sadness 2015. LWT Sports. It's in the chain.
This game is some bullshit.
That was Last Week Tonight from a few years ago. And I've been on this, I can't stand the National Collegiate Athletic Association kick for many, many years. Okay, yes, I do watch it, you know. And I don't participate in these brackets or bracketology. I care less. Most times I could care less who wins. But to me, I think Bill Maher said it best. March Madness is really a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the labor of unpaid black people. For real. Making tons of money, billions of dollars. And they are the product. The coaches ain't, the coaches making tons. See, this article in USA Today last week, Wednesday, showing the amount of money, and I could just give you just a few of the individuals. Like they said, John Calipari, who coaches Kentucky, is making $8 million a year. And just like Jalen Rose said, they have multiple streams of income, apparel deals. Those players must wear, like Zion Williams, who blew out his shoe for Duke and twisting his knee, he has to wear those shoes. He has to wear that jersey with that logo because the coach gets paid. The coach also has a radio program, a TV program, and other local endorsements and probably national endorsements. These are the basketball coaches, and I think Calipari is the highest paid basketball coach. But there are other coaches. Virginia Tech, Buzz Williams, he coached at Marquette. Don't know what he made at Marquette. Once again, these are all public schools. Because more than likely, the coach of the public school in a state makes more money than anybody in that state. Probably combined.
Wow.
Hold on. And so the belief is we got to pay him because he brings in so much money. We got Nick Saban and that other butthole that you heard, Dabo Sweeney of Clemson. Of course, Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney played Clemson, Alabama for the national championship a few months ago with Clemson winning. And so Dabo Sweeney, if you listen to that piece, was making like $3 million. He's making almost $8 million now. Nick Saban is making $11 million. And so that's the salary that the state of South Carolina and the state of Alabama are paying those two individuals. But once again, they have all those other multiple streams of income. And the fact that when I heard, because I saw that program when it aired a few years ago. I watch it every now and then because it comes on Sunday nights on HBO. And I saw that and I didn't like Clemson, didn't like Dabo Sweeney, but I developed a sincere disdain and hatred towards Dabo Sweeney. I hate to see him, hate to hear him talk. You know, he's such a phony. But when he said what he said with such, and he was so adamant, no, that if, when that happens, that you lose me. At that time when he said that, he was making $3 million a year. They make the money. You just go out there and play. Now, I'm going to give Calipari, who I can't stand, a little bit of a prop because from a number of years ago, he began to go into people's homes and tell them about their child and what he's going to do. He didn't say you need to come to the university. Well, when I first knew about John Calipari, he was at UMass. Then he went to Memphis, and he took that Memphis team with Jalen Rose to the national championship against Kentucky and Bill Self. And Bill Self makes a hell of a lot of money, too. All those cats do, you know. And then, of course, he got the Kentucky job after Rick Pitino. You know, well, also, too, Calipari went to the NBA. But they realized in the NBA, They ain't taking that stuff. And they make more money than the coach. But the coach in college, big time college football, makes huge amount. The athletic director, the assistant coaches, everybody makes money. Just like in that piece you talked about Alabama. The fact they have all this money, they have to spend it. And so they develop all kinds of amenities, all kinds of opulence, big pools and weight rooms and so forth. They got to spend that money. Also, too, the money that these guys make, the brothers in football, and I'm talking about specifically football and basketball at the big universities that you see each weekend, that you see on TV, the fact that ESPN pays billions, the fact that CBS, NBC, ABC, billions, Fox, all of them that are involved in college athletics, and they pay big money. And then, of course, the advertisers pay big money. Everything is sponsored. They pay big money. I'm going to take, let me see what we got here. 703. Good afternoon. 703.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I'm originally Ethiopian. I called you last time and I talked to you.
Yes.
Just listening.
Thank you. Thank you.
What's going on? But I have my own message. I wanted to pass it to you.
Sure.
I believe that for African Americans, the continent owes you land. And I was thinking about that all along. I say they deserve to have land anywhere they want to in Africa because it's your continent too. That's where you came from. So I just want to give you that message to you.
Thank you very much, because we'll be talking about that. In fact, we talk about reparation and other things.
We don't want to talk about the blaming game, but at least, you know, just to recognize that that also belongs to you. The land belongs to you.
That's
too.
Right.
And,
that's
what
right.
I want to say.
I appreciate that, dear, because I believe in one Africa. We are Africans on the continent throughout the diaspora, and we need to work together. We need to be as one. Thank you, dear.
Yes,
have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
So, you got all these coaches at all these big state universities, you know, Indiana, Archie Miller, he makes 3.2. I can just picking them out. Georgia, Tom Crean, who was at Marquette. I bet he wasn't making $3.2 million at Marquette. I bet you the Marquette coach don't make the, a lot of the private schools doesn't probably may not pay as much. I don't know. But what I'm seeing here is ridiculous. Coaches making at least $3 million. In the 2017 to 18 season, it was 14. The 2018 to 19, 21. You can see a huge jump. Coaches making at least $2 million. At least that was the previous coach is $3 million, 21 right now. The coach is at least making $2 million in the 2017-18 season, 47. Today, in this season, the 18 to 19 season, 55. Average total pay of the power conferences, Big Ten, Pac-10, SEC, Southwestern Conference, and so forth, they're making, ACC, they were making 2.6, now they're making 2.8, continuing to go up, 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 and up. And, you know, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. I pulled an article from Your Black World, you know. No, not Black, Your Black World. Not that. That's not Your Black World. This is from Atlanta Black Star. In Atlanta Black Star. Six reasons NCAA football and basketball are like slavery. And this was in 2014. Six reasons. We're going to go over the six. Athletes don't get paid. The National Collegiate Athletic Association, the NCAA, and member colleges and universities are comparable to slave plantations. They acquire student athletes who work for them tirelessly without pay, for free, not a dime. With college sports now generating upwards of $8 billion a year from television rights, tickets, and licensing fees, the young people whose labor actually make all that money possible are getting impatient with amateurism. And it's rooted in 19th century British ideas. Keep them ignorant. Keep them wanting for more. NCAA owns the player's identity. We went over that in the piece with Ed O'Bannon. Now, understand, this was 2014. Some lawsuits have been in, but basically it's still the same, brothers and sisters. It's still the same. The players don't get nothing. And the fact that when they say, well, they're going to go pro, I venture to say every player who is on that court or on that football field believe that they are going to be a professional athlete. The ones that make it to the NBA and NFL are less than 2%. Now, some of them do go overseas. Some of them do play in the G League. Some of them do play semi-pro football and so forth. But no, we ain't talking about that. We're talking about big time, and that's minuscule. Universities have rights of owners and receive payment from the labor of the athletes in various forms, including selling shirts and other officially licensed gear with their names on it, faces and identification numbers, while prohibiting the player from earning anything, no money. Not only does the NCAA prevent the students from making money from their likeness during their tenure at the schools, they also own the rights in perpetuity forever and continue to profit from the players long after they leave. College merchandise licensing is a $4 billion annual business, and that's a lot more today because, once again, this article was 2014. And NCAA has cornered the market. An NCAA business partner, though Equity Motions, has called the NCAA's video content archives one of the most unique and valuable content collections in the world. They continue to make money. The licensing fees. You know, yeah. See, Chris Webber, who played for the Fab Five along with Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, Jackson, and Jimmy King. Those are the Fab Five. And they did some innovations and so forth. They were, you know, the long shorts, the black socks, all of that, the Fab Five, you know. Not as impactful, I believe, as these Duke dudes, you know, Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett and other brother. But anyway, Chris Webber said he passed by the bookstore and they were selling his number 4 jersey with his name on it. He couldn't afford to buy it. They were making money off him. And that's when he decided that right then and there, I'm going to quit. He passed by the bookstore and they're selling his stuff and he couldn't afford to buy it. You know? Many players below the poverty line, the average scholarship shortfall, out-of-pocket expenses for each full scholarship athlete was approximately $3,200 during the 2010-2011 school year. Once again, these are, you know, I'm throwing this at you, but I know it's really outdated because that was 2010-2011. It's almost 10 years ago. And I'm quite sure it's a lot lower than that. And however, the room and board provisions of a full scholarship leave 85% of the players living on campus and 86% of the players living off campus surviving at or below poverty line. Meanwhile, the fair market value of the average football bowl subdivision, which is the college football FBS and basketball player, listen, the average value, the value for football, $121,000, and basketball, $265,000, respectfully. At large programs, the disparity is even larger. University of Texas football players' fair market value was $513,000, but they lived $780 below the federal poverty line and had 3,600 scholarship shortfall. Duke basketball players were valued at more than $1 million while living just $732 below the poverty line with scholarship shortfall of $1,900.
Hey, Oakie.
Yo, what's up, Jay?
Check this out. I think based on that O'Bannon lawsuit, they no longer make college video games.
Right.
because the NCAA doesn't want to pay him
right. The
license fees.
Exactly.
So they don't do that. And I think the NFL players, they get a percentage based off of their licensing because they're professionals. But I understand clearly what you're saying in regards to the NCAA. I mean, you know, their whole thing is, well, they give a kid an opportunity to get an education. It's up to the kid to take advantage of it, which in a sense, I think the top level players don't fully take advantage of the opportunity. But, you know, the lower level players, you know, it's up to us to make them take advantage of it and to do the necessary things. That's why, you know, I don't totally blame the NCAA for the abuse. I think it's just the way the system is, but it's the obligation of the parent or the guardian to make sure that if your child gets this opportunity, that they take fully advantage of it.
Well, listen to this, Jay, listen to this. Jay, listen to this. Most of the players, I know many years ago, it was so bad that they started to print publicly the fact that most of the players in big-time college basketball, as well as other even smaller conferences, were not graduating. These kids were not graduating. Hold on, let me finish this point, because one of the things with big-time, I can't speak to the smaller divisions and so forth, but one of the things with big time college basketball, it is intense. Just like Richard Sherman said, I don't have time. Because if you are a big time basketball and football player, you are working around the clock. Because those schools and those big conferences, so competitive, the coach himself who makes the millions of dollars, he wants to keep his contract, wants to keep his position. So they practice more often. They practice during the off season. They have all these other regimens that they have to fulfill. So I'm saying, you know, to be a true student athlete is bull. That's bull.
No, that is true.
No, Jay, that is true on the big time level. Maybe when you're talking about Division II, Division III, or small college, no, that's not true. They have a definite ability to play the sport. They love the play. They don't have any delusions of grandeur about the NFL or NBA, and they can get an education.
Oshie, do you know that athletes are the first ones to pick any course in college? Do you know that? Do you know that the academic advisors set up schedules for these students? Do you know that? Now, this is something that I know for a fact because of participation. The bottom line is this. Any kid that has the ability to learn and to do the necessary things as a student has probably one of the most easiest rides in college than a child that doesn't have the ability. You know, if you are a good student, you could basically go to college and finish off in three and a half years. Okay. I've seen it happen.
Okay, Jay, I'm speaking not of the exception. I'm speaking of the rule. I'm speaking what generally happens in these programs and amount of people that go through these programs that come back basically with, yeah. Because their whole idea, Jay, you have to admit that the majority of the people that you're going to see playing college basketball starting tomorrow, really, because they have two play-in games. They have a play-in game tomorrow night and Wednesday night. Tomorrow night's the ones that win, they're going to play somebody on Thursday. The ones who are going to play Wednesday, they're going to play somebody on Friday, okay? Now, here's my point. They are looking towards the NBA. Those players that you saw in the big-time college football, in the playoffs and so forth, they're looking towards the NBA, the NFL.
That's not true. See, Ochi, what you fail to understand is But when you become a freshman in college and you're playing for a big-time basketball program, and you
Jay, you're breaking up on me. I didn't understand anything you said. Jay, you still there? Jay, you're breaking up on me. Hang up and call back.
I'm saying, OG, about what you're putting out because I deal with this.
Wait a minute, what'd you say?
Brother.
What'd you say, Jay?
I'm saying I mentor kids in these programs. And what I'm trying to say is what you're putting out is not the total picture in regards
to Jay, hey, Jay, it is the total picture. It is the total picture. Yes, it is.
You let me explain it to you.
No, here. I'll explain it to you, Jay. I know me and you don't do battle like this, but I need to make this very clear. I understand what you're saying because to some degree you are correct. But the way the NC2A has administered this, the way the NC2A has done this, it is exploited. Okay? Yes, a young man can go to college on a full ride scholarship because academically and athletically, he's all there. So he knows that he's going to this school really for the academics. He loves to play football. He loves to play basketball. He has no delusions of grandeur. He knows he probably won't go to the NBA because the mummers that go to the NBA are less than 1%. He knows he's not going to go to the NFL. He's not as fast. He's not as quick, but he can play. So I understand that. So he knows that that's his opportunity for a better life for himself and his family. And he could take advantage of that. What I'm saying to you is there have been many kids, many young men who have gone into these institutions and then the institution made sure that they were eligible for 4 years. And then after their eligibility was up, after they gave all that time to the university kicked them to the curb.
You're wrong. You know where you're wrong at? Let me tell you quickly where you're wrong at.
Okay.
You're wrong at it that you're blaming the NCAA. It's not the fault of the NCAA. It's the fault of the coaching staff. That's the fault of the coaching staff, OG. It's not the NCAA.
Let me say this again.
That is the obligation of who you give your child to.
Let me say this again,
if
Jay.
Jay,
let me say this again. The NC2A is the parent company. The NC2A has made it clear that the young people, and they put it in their language specifically to make sure that you understood that these are students. These are not employees. They don't need to get paid. They're students. And as an extracurricular, they play sports. As an extracurricular, they play big time sports. They go to practice all the time. They got off season programs. And then during the season, I mean, they're really tied up. It's the NC2. You mean it's not the problem of the NC2A? The NC2A is making billions of dollars? And not making sure. And there was one point, Jay, it got so damn bad that it became a national issue of the fact that these guys were in college and being moved along, being used. So I'm saying
who
no.
Who fault is that? That's not the NCAA's fault. That's the coaching staff's fault. That's why the NCAA punishes the coaches when they get caught up in this mess. They don't punish the NCAA. They punish the coach because it's the obligation of the coach to guide your child into whatever success that he's going to have.
But see, Jay, the coaches don't care about... The coaches don't care about it. Yes, they want these young men to be eligible, but they also know just like they have these weak courses to make sure that that young person is eligible. You remember that one piece that they showed some years ago where this Caucasian lady, she was doing testing for a lot of these students. You know,
hey,
the coaches would come.
Can I say this to
sure.
you? Because I know time is running short.
Sure.
I've dealt in this environment for the last, say, 14, 15 years. And I can honestly tell you, over the last 5 to 6 years, your narrative has totally changed. And it started changing even before this whole thing happened with North Carolina. And the reason why I tell you this is because when you're mentoring kids at this day and age and you're dealing with coaching staffs on the NCAA basketball level and football level, people are on these players like a hawk and on these coaches like a hawk. What I was trying to tell you is that if you are a recruit coming into a college and you do not break into the rotation, there are now coaches that sit down with the kid immediately and tell them, look, this is what you have to work on if you want to get to this level, and this is what you have to realize in regards that there's not going to be opportunities for the NBA. There may be opportunities for overseas, and that you have to concentrate on your academics. And what they do is they place tutors and they place assistants to help them in regards to moving forward their academics. And the beautiful thing about a student athlete is if you keep yourself out of trouble, you are basically set for a privileged situation for alumni. And I know this for a fact because I've dealt with too many kids who have done the right thing, stayed out of trouble, got the education, and the alumni take care of them lovely.
Okay, Jay. Okay, Jay.
So this is what I'm trying to say to you.
I'm saying to you.
I'm saying to you.
Let me say this to you now, Jay. I think you are correct in some degree because I do know some guys that play big time college basketball and football. And some of those guys were ushered into some good jobs. They didn't unfortunately play in the NBA or in the NFL. But because of the alumni and all the things they did to university, they were shown favor. I understand that. I do. But anytime that you see the amount of money being made, the amount of money that the coaches are making, the amount of money that assistants are making, even the weight coach is making six figures. All of them are making more money than tenured professors. All of them are in the state of many states, the athletic director, the football coach, the basketball coach is making more money than any person in the state. The governor, tenured professor, whatever. I'm saying all that's happening, and what do players get? What do players get?
They put in more revenue than the professor does.
Then that's why they get paid like that. I agree. And that's the rationale. That's the rationale. They say, well, Nick Saban brings in because his football program is so outstanding. You know, the stadium is packed. And so forth. He brings all his money. He needs to be compensated for that. You know?
But the thing that you're not also saying, OG, is that the university pays them a certain amount, but the boosters and other programs and other things pay them all that extra money. You can't blame the university for that. If I give you $2 million as a university, and you're able to make another $6 million, hey, I can't hate on you. But the reality is the university pays you $2 million because you're bringing in maybe $200 million. Jay,
I gotta go, and you've been breaking up on me.
Give me a call.
Okay.
All right,
Jay. All right, Jay. Thanks a lot, brother. Peace.
All right.
Peace. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like when all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. And a Bibi Fahoria means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahoria, peace, family.